It's Tuesday, the 5th of May, 2026. The sun is up early enough now that I've been reading by it instead of the kitchen lamp, which is the small, seasonal pleasure of moving deeper into spring. The shape of the news this morning has a different quality than yesterday's. Less procurement and cost, more frontier and feud. We have a packed Week in Review podcast that landed last night, with three model releases stacked into one episode. A federal trial in Oakland that is going to keep producing headlines for weeks, a Pentagon budget signal worth paying attention to, and a discourse essay that I think every policy-adjacent reader should sit with. Let me walk you through these four. First up, last week in AI episode 243 is the densest single artifact of the week, and the reason it is sitting at the top of my list is the sheer concentration of frontier news the hosts pack into one show. Andrei Kurenkov and Jeremy Harris recorded on April 29th and posted yesterday afternoon. The headline releases GPT 5.5 from OpenAI, which the system card characterizes as a coding-oriented improvement over GPT 5.4, with higher per-token pricing. The system card also surfaces chain-of-thought monitorability and misalignment testing as headline items. OpenAI continues to publish reasoning trace probes against its own models. And it includes a now-discussed system prompt warning about goblins that the hosts treat as a deployment time tooling quirk rather than a serious capability claim. Then, xAI countered with Grok Voice ThinkFast 1.0, claiming large benchmark leads on real-time voice agents and reporting concrete production impact at Starlink customer support and sales, large enough lifts that the hosts treat it as a credible Whisper Plus frontier model competitor rather than a demo, though all the benchmarks are first party. And then the bigger frontier news, which is DeepSeek V4, Pro and Flash variants ship as open weights, the architecture moves deeper into mixture of experts scaling, and context is pushed to 1 million tokens via hybrid compressed attention modifications. The hosts read this as a continuation of the post-V3 cadence. The lab is converging on the same recipe that closed-weight labs use internally and shipping the artifacts publicly. Tencent's Hunyuan 3 preview lands the same week with weaker benchmarks, and Andrei treats it as evidence that the marginal value of yet another Chinese frontier release is dropping unless the lab can clearly differentiate. The episode also covers a deliberate-sounding sabotage incident inside a Frontier Systems training pipeline that the hosts characterize, without naming a perpetrator, treating it as evidence that supply chain attacks against model training are now a credible threat surface and not a hypothetical one. The whole thing runs about an hour and 52 minutes and is worth listening to in full if you want context on each release. The signal I would carry away is that DeepSeek V4 and Grok Voice ThinkFast both land as serious challengers in their respective domains in the same week, that GPT 5.5 raises the price per coding task ceiling without obviously moving the floor, and that the misalignment conversation is shifting from will the model deceive toward will an adversary plant the deception. Moving on to our second story, James O'Donnell at MIT Technology Review filed the cleanest on-the-ground report from the first week of the Musk versus Altman trial in Oakland federal court. Musk is alleging that OpenAI breached its founding nonprofit mission, and the legal stakes are concrete. He is seeking rescission and disgorgement tied to his early funding contributions, and the strongest of his claims hinge on whether OpenAI's transition from nonprofit to capped profit and to its current structure violated explicit promises made to him in writing. A partial Musk win would, by the reporter's read, materially complicate OpenAI's reported plan to go public this year because the company is in the middle of preparing a registration filing, and any successful claim that its capital structure was constructed on a breached fiduciary duty would have to be disclosed to investors and resolved before pricing. The reporter highlights several substantive moments. Musk on the stand was more measured than expected in legal posture, repeatedly returning to the email record to show that his early checks were sized and timed against a non-profit governance structure he believed Altman would maintain. Altman's direct examination is scheduled for this week, and is expected to push back on the premise that any fixed promise was made. OpenAI's defense is that the for-profit subsidiary was always contemplated as a path to fund the mission, and that Musk himself proposed a corporate structure pivot in 2017. Beyond the OpenAI IPO stakes, what makes this trial unusual is the spectacle dimension. Two of the most powerful figures in this industry testifying within feet of each other while their feud plays out on X in real time, with each side's PR apparatus pushing transcripts and selective quotes. TechCrunch ran two adjacent threads this week, one piece on Musk's only AI expert witness who testified about an AGI arms race, and another surfacing the now public ominous post-funding texts Musk sent Greg Brockman and Sam Altman. If you are tracking AI corporate governance or planning to read the OpenAI registration filing when it lands, this is the trial of the year. Third up, Patrick Tucker at Defense One has reporting on the Pentagon's fiscal 2027 budget request, and the autonomous warfare line is poised to grow significantly, with explicit emphasis on drones that can self-organize into formations and execute mission segments without per-platform operator input. The framing is a deliberate move past the current replicator paradigm. Replicator emphasizes mass-produced, low-cost individual platforms. The new push emphasizes coordinated swarms, these running shared autonomy stacks. The technical architecture is built around three layers. What? Perception, where the platforms maintain local situational awareness via onboard sensor fusion stacks without continuous data link to a controller. Coordination, where role assignment, formation maintenance, and target handoff run across the swarm via mesh networking. And tasking, where a human operator specifies mission objectives at the formation level instead of tasking each platform individually. Several of the named technology providers, Anduril, Shield AI, Skydio, and a handful of smaller defense tech companies, already deploy versions of all three layers in standalone products. But the integration story across vendors is still unsolved. The budget growth is the actual news here. Autonomous systems lines have been growing at roughly 35% year over year for the past three budget cycles, and the FY27 request is expected to extend that growth, with most of the increment going to platform-agnostic autonomy software rather than specific airframes. The Pentagon is treating autonomy as a horizontal capability, the same software stack expected to fly on multiple replicator-class platforms, on kamikaze drones like the Switchblade 400 that the Army awarded contracts on this week, and on the larger collaborative combat aircraft programs in development with the Air Force. Two emerging tensions are worth watching: the procurement model question of how the Defense Innovation Unit's non-traditional rapid prototyping pipeline scales to formation-level deployment without dropping software update cadence to the once-per-year tempo of traditional acquisition, and the data-sharing question, where smaller vendors are reluctant to share flight test data with Pentagon program offices because the data is core IP. But the Pentagon needs cross-platform datasets to train and validate the formation coordination layer. Several vendors interviewed pushed back on the framing that swarm coordination is almost solved, noting that adversarial jamming environments and degraded GPS scenarios remain weak spots. The piece pairs naturally with this week's other defense tech beats and tells you that the autonomy software market for defense is shifting towards standardized platform-agnostic stacks. And for our fourth and final story today, Nathan Lambert's essay, "The Distillation Panic," is the most pointed policy discourse piece of the week and pushes back against the recent framing of distillation attacks, the term that has emerged in U.S. policy circles to describe Chinese labs hacking or jailbreaking commercial APIs to extract training signal. Lambert's core claim is that distillation attacks is a horrible piece of terminology that will, by repeated use in policy documents, irrevocably associate the broad and useful research technique of distillation with a narrow misuse pattern. The technical distinction he is defending is real and important. Distillation as a research method covers everything from teacher-student knowledge transfer to model compression, mixture of experts, expert pruning, and the entire post-training synthetic data pipeline that nearly every frontier lab now uses. It is one of the core tools that makes academic and economic diffusion of AI capability possible. Small labs and startups can fine-tune on outputs from larger models. Researchers can build interpretability tools by distilling behavior into more analyzable forms. Downstream consumers benefit from cheaper, faster models trained from larger ones. The attack framing turns this entire toolkit into an act adjacent to a hostile state. Lambert draws an explicit parallel to the open source versus open weights debate, where careless terminology and policy circles collapsed a meaningful technical distinction into a single label that nobody remembers the original definition of, and he argues the same fate is now playing out for distillation. U.S. National Security Commentary now treats every API extraction as suspect. The press echoes the framing, and within months, the academic community will find itself defending a research practice it previously considered uncontroversial. Where the essay gets practically useful is in his prescription. He proposes naming the actual misuse pattern more narrowly, API extraction or training signal exfiltration, and reserving distillation for the legitimate research technique. He notes that the labs themselves have a role to play here. Rate limiting and detection of exfiltration patterns are concrete defenses that don't require terminological overhang, and the frontier labs are already deploying both. He argues that policy work focused on the actual exfiltration pathways, telemetry, terms of service enforcement, attribution in logs, is more useful than blanket framings that risk catching legitimate research in their net. The piece is short by Interconnect standards, around 8 minutes of audio narration, and lands as a deliberate intervention in the policy discourse rather than a deep technical post. Looking at these four together, the through line is interesting. The frontier model's story is producing mass releases at a pace where one episode of a Week in Review podcast has to cover three of them in 90 minutes. The legal story is starting to weigh on the corporate structures the labs were built inside. The defense story is shifting the conversation away from individual platforms and toward the autonomy software stack as a horizontal capability the Pentagon will buy at scale. And the policy language story, the distillation panic framing, is a quiet reminder that what we name things in this space sets the trajectory for what gets regulated, often in ways the technical community will not get a second chance to push back against. There are 245 items in the full digest if you want depth, including a strong block of robotic autonomy and reinforcement learning archive papers I did not get to today. I'll be back tomorrow morning with whatever Tuesday turns into. Until then, keep reading papers.